because they are new to town and they want to know what's happening in their new city and what and meet the people around them. And they know that this is a place to come to be a part of that community, to learn about the important things happening where they're living, and to be a part of making change in their community. And that is what we are here to do. We are a service for you. So show your support, 877-500-5266.
And we are KBOO.FM.
That's right. Show us that money. Money talks.
I'm not Tom Cruise.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Bridges Cafe and Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic, open daily. Lunch was provided by Por Que No Taqueria, located in North Portland at 3524 North Mississippi Ave. Por Que No Taqueria has been serving Portland since 2005 and has been committed to both the communities and the food that they serve. More information online at porquenotacos.com. Dinner was provided by Scotty's Pizza Parlor, located at 2128 Southeast Division Street in the Hosford-Abernethy neighborhood of Portland. Serving pizza, desserts, and more, Scotty's is open every day from 11:30 to 9 p.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative, open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years, online at peoples.coop.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is now 11:02. Up next is the bike show. I ride around town, around, round, around with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around, round, around, round the town with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around town, around, round, around with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. Welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studios here in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Tori Bortman, and I'm here with my co-host, April Streeter. Hello, April.
Hi, Tori.
Every day on Oregon streets, bicyclists find ourselves in dangerous and often confusing situations. We might see another cyclist or driver do something that seems unlawful, but may not be. Are we in the right, or do they know something we don't? In some of these cases, we find ourselves in the unfortunate situation of getting hit by a driver. Sometimes insurance works out, but other times we need a little more expertise to help justice be served. Our guest today will help clear up some of these confusing situations and update us on the latest Oregon laws to protect and encourage bicycling in our state. But first, we want to encourage you for our winter membership drive to call in right now at 877-500-5266 and become a part of the KBOO family. If you're already part of the KBOO family, this is a great time to up your membership or give a little extra for winter. It is the holidays, and we always love to hear from you. That's 877-500-5266. I've been a volunteer and member of KBOO for almost 15 years.
Wow.
And I would love if you could join me in supporting and celebrating the news and views that we bring you all year long. It is the holidays, but we really do need help and your support all year to keep the radio station up, thriving, bringing you the amazing news, music shows, the programming that we bring you all year long, especially at this time of year when we've got a lot going on politically. But there's, and a lot of us are focused right now on what's going on with the impeachment. But hey, there's still NATO, there's still the WTO celebration, all these things that are overlooked by some media streams. This is what KBOO brings you. And we want to continue to keep bringing you this great programming. So please call now. It's 877-500-5266. You can also donate at kboo.fm. Just click on the donation button and we will take your membership donation that way too. We want you to be a part of our KBOO family.
April? Yeah. Starting out with some news, also called the Bike Show News Minute. No, you want me to? Okay. I'm going to talk about what KBOO means to me. And the Bike Show, through your support, we are able to do this show, which we think is bringing the best of bike news from around the world and also talking about local issues and what's happening out on the streets every day. So if you value this type of show, which we work hard to bring you every month, it's time to donate and help support that by calling 877-500-5266. Of course, all forms of contribution are welcome and can be tax deductible, which is an extra little plus. And one of the best ways, most convenient ways to support KBOO is by becoming a monthly donor and member. Over 40% of our members give monthly, and on average, they donate $11.50 per month. This is a stable funding for the station. And the more money that we raise during these funding drives means less interrupted programming for you. So one of the things that's being offered today is the KBOO Black Beanie for a pledge of just $60 or $5 per month.
Excellent. Well, for more on actual news, April, do you want to bring us some bike news from this past month?
Yes, I've got some bike news that was put together by our co-host Alan Robb. And the first news item comes from The Guardian. The Guardian reported that Mirtha Munoz, a 70-year-old Bolivian woman, became the oldest person to conquer what's called the Sky Race, one of the world's toughest cycling competitions. The 37-mile road spirals upward 11,000 feet from Bolivia's lowland jungle to the snow-capped peaks of the Andes through fog, rain, rock slides, and sheer cliffs. It's one of the world's most challenging and dangerous roads. It's a vertical climb. You go up and up and up, and there's no rest, Munoz told reporters after finishing the race. She took up biking on the advice of her family and a psychologist friend after her son died unexpectedly. She was hoping that the bike could help her get through her pain and rebuild her life. Munoz said she enjoys more low-key biking with her six grandchildren, but she does hope her eldest grandchild, who's 18, will soon follow in her tracks. And the next item is about 25 Colorado cyclists who set a new world record for the longest static indoor cycling class. Led by lawyer and athlete Megan Hotman, the group cycled for 28 hours straight, breaking the previous record by 2 hours. Our goal was to raise $100,000 for People for Bikes so that they can go out and make cycling safer, put in protective bike lanes, and get some amazing laws passed for us so we can ride bikes everywhere, said Megan Hotman. Bicycles make us happier, healthier people and improve the communities we live in, she added. If cycling were safer and if more people felt they could transport themselves by bike or exercise by bike safely, it could change our entire society. For more on Hotman's cycling ventures and adventures, you can check out her website. We will put that up on the KBOO Bike Show Facebook page after the show. Lastly, London cyclist Josh Cohen has invented a foldable cycling helmet made from recycled ocean plastic. So he was working in London, and he just didn't feel safe. He worked at a marketing agency, and after coming home between two buses with his bike, he thought, why aren't helmets automatically provided for anyone choosing to bike? He started doing some research, and from there came up with an idea for a recycled plastic helmet. It's called Cyclo, and it uses ocean plastic. It's worn like a normal helmet, but once it's time to put it away in a bag or backpack, the user presses a button, allowing the top part of the helmet to swivel laterally so it nests upside down within the helmet's bottom section. So go check that out at cyclotechnology.com. Back to you, Tori.
Thanks so much, April. Our guest today is one of Portland's most well-known bicycle lawyers, Mark Ginsburg. Mark Ginsburg is a partner in Berkshire Ginsburg LLC, personal injury lawyers. He specializes in protecting the rights of injured cyclists and their families while addressing the unique aspects of bicycle collision cases. He also, more importantly, works as a consultant to Oregon State legislators when formulating new laws around transportation. Mark Ginsburg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tori. I'm always happy to be here.
Yeah, you were here in May of 2018, and we're so glad to have you back because there are some new laws coming into Portland that are super, super important. But first, we want to talk to you a little bit about what the main bicycle-related laws that bicyclists should know, because maybe they've been on the books for a long time, and maybe drivers need to be educated a little bit about why bicyclists are behaving that way. But they don't know why. So, but first, I am going to turn to our dear listeners and ask you, hey, we're doing the winter membership drive right now. And for people like Mark Ginsburg to be here and bring us these amazing, this amazing information and this great support, we need your support to help keep us going. So we want you to become a part of the KBOO family. Become a member, and every dollar at KBOO matters, which is why we are challenging our monthly sustaining members to increase their monthly donation amount by $1 or $2 or more if you can. I mean, as much as you can give is as much as will help us. If all of our monthly donors give just $1 more, that would be an extra $27,000 a year for the station, or $54,000 for two more dollars. That's a lot of your $1 or $2 a month making a huge impact. So pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266 to increase your monthly donation or to become a sustained member, which I am a sustained member, and I love the ease at which we can just, I don't even think about it. It just comes out of my bank account. When I do think about it, I think, oh, that was easy, and I feel better every time when I balance my books at the end of the month. I feel like I've done something wonderful, and I also feel like I have contributed, and I also feel even more so a member of the KBOO family than I have before. And we want you to be a part of this family, and thank you to those who are out there already for keeping KBOO going. It is you who keeps the station alive. The number to call is 877-500-5266, or you can go to kboo.fm/give.
I'm going to repeat that number because you missed a zero in there, oh. Tori. So it was 877-500-5266. And one of the things that I wanted to add is that the bike show is unique to KBOO, and nationally, we don't have a lot of bike-oriented radio, so you're supporting our show by becoming a member. And that's important because I think one of the best things about community radio is it's real. You know, it's happening. We're here. Everybody, volunteers make it happen, and you make it happen by becoming a member and giving.
Thank you so much, April. So back to Mark Ginsburg. We are so glad to get you here. Mark is a personal injury lawyer and consultant to the Oregon State Legislature about new laws. But there's already laws on the books that a lot of people don't know. Can you tell us about some of the most either misunderstood or misinterpreted laws for cyclists?
Sure. I think this time of year, it's getting darker earlier and it's darker later into the morning. And so lights are really important for bicyclists. And people misunderstand the law. The law is a floor for bicycle headlights and taillights. There's technically no taillight requirement. We have a white headlight requirement and a red reflector requirement, but those are a minimum. And Oregon law is clear that those are only the floor, and you could do more. And my real world advice to everybody is to do more. Bicycle lights themselves have never been less expensive. They're a great investment in your own safety. And one of the types of bicycle lights I'm really happy to see now, especially for people on their commuter bike where they're not as worried about weight or aerodynamics, are wheel-mounted lights that you can see from the side, because it makes it so much easier to be seen when you have lights completely surrounding your bike in a 360-degree
So are you talking about like in your spokes?
Yes, absolutely.
And do you have those?
I do. Not on my racy bikes, but on my daily rider, I do. The other place where I'm a kind of big believer, because a lot of studies have shown, is places that move, like your ankles. And, you know, industry research is showing that colored booties for bike racers, or bright ankle straps or lights around your ankles, because it's moving as compared to a bicycle light that's just perceived as a more constant line, it's easier to catch someone else's eye, whether that's a pedestrian or a car driver, to make yourself as visible as possible.
I think part of that, if I remember correctly, had to do with the shape that your feet make while they're moving. It identifies you as a cyclist, as, you know, you're not just somebody with a flashlight walking a dog. You're moving a little faster. It gives people more perception of how you're on the road and how fast you're moving.
Correct. The most common bicycle versus car crash in Portland, and this is also the most common car versus motorcycle crash, is where they're each approaching each other in a head-on position. Car driver misjudges bicycle or motorcyclist oncoming speed and turns left. We're used to external things, like if a dog is running towards you, its ears are flapping, or a kid's clothing. But if a bicyclist or motorcyclist is coming at you, every study shows we regularly underestimate their speed, whether they're speeding or not. And so anything you can do to make yourself more visible and to give more information, while it's not required by law, certainly helps to make everybody safer.
I wanted to spend a minute on lights, though, because I know that for motorists, that can be something that is, let's say, irritating for bike lights, to be see bike lights. So do you have something that you recommend, or is there a lumens or something that people should go by? Do you know?
Well, I think it's a matter of finding a balance in terms of brightness and also direction.
Okay.
You know, I'm glad to see flashing bike lights. I think they work. I know some people have asked me in the past if there were ever concerns about a flashing headlight, because it clearly has a moment where it is off.
Yeah.
And I'm not aware of anybody ever being ticketed or charged for that not meeting the requirements of Oregon law.
Okay.
I think a lot of it, though, is about direction that lights are facing. Red taillights that flash historically presume it's sort of perpendicular. And if you put it on the back of a bicycle, sometimes they can tilt upwards. And that can definitely be in the eyes of a driver. And so you've got to find a balance between being seen and making sure the direction that your lights are facing is reasonable.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, I tend to find, like, when I'm using, I have a very, I think 750 lumen front light. And if I'm using it, I'm flashing, which I actually only find helpful at dusk and dawn, like, or rain.
Right.
At lights, I make a conscious effort to actually point it down towards the ground when I'm stopped, so that I'm not flashing it in a waiting driver's face.
Sure.
And also I find that, honestly, the wet road oftentimes reflects the light too and makes it more, and then I move it back up when I start moving again. But that's just a personal preference, because I am, as most cyclists are, a driver and a cyclist.
Right.
So I've been on both sides of that situation. And there's times I personally prefer to use it solid, but there are times I definitely use it blinking.
Flashing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see.
Are there any other major laws that are people besides the lights?
Well, I think there's always tons that we think about in terms of, first of all, every bicyclist is required to use the roads as a car driver, right? The rules are the same for both. And of course, there are some rules that don't match. And that's always the tension, right?
Yeah.
Because Oregon law says that all the rules of the road apply to a bicyclist, except those which by their very nature cannot. And so, for example, signaling laws are a little bit different for bicyclists versus car drivers. You're required to signal with a hand signal, unless you can't, because you need to maintain control of your vehicle. And so we see a lot of frustration from car drivers versus bicyclists if a bicyclist doesn't signal. And that's just, a lack of understanding on the part of that car driver, in that it's not required if the bicyclist has to maintain control of their vehicle. And if they're in an environment with a bunch of cars, or maybe especially this time of year, wet leaves on the road, it's reasonable to make sure you've got both hands on the bars and you're controlling your vehicle.
Or going downhill. I think that's a really tough one where you can kind of, as a cyclist, you can kind of slow down, put your hand up. But as you're really picking up speed, you can't signal. You need to have your hands on the brakes, and there are two brakes, and you need to have your... I think another one that's misunderstood coming to turning is that you can just point right or point left when you're on a bicycle.
That's correct.
Because the hand signals were actually made for cars, for a driver to stick their hand out the driver's
their
side.
Their left hand out
the window where people could see it.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But it makes more sense for bicyclists because it's much more clear to just point boldly where you're going.
Right.
And so many people use those driver signals, but when you're on a bike, you make a different shape. And it's hard to see those signals. I'm demonstrating it here in the studio.
For those not in the studio, Tori is gesticulating wildly.
She is.
What we're talking about is that it is legal for a bicyclist to use their left arm to signal a stop, a left turn, or a right turn in the classic hand down, hand pointing left, and hand pointing up. And it is also legal for a bicyclist to signal right with their right arm pointing right.
Okay.
And that's a piece that a lot of people don't understand.
Now, do you teach that, Tori, when you're giving people bike lessons?
Yes, I only teach people the point right, point left.
Point right, point left.
Because it is more important to be clear, I think, than anything else.
Yes.
And also what I found is the bigger the gesture, the more the cars pay attention. So even if they're not clear on what you're doing, they're much more visible gestures to point your arm perpendicular to your body, point it
right.
straight out into the lane than it is the other way. So I mention the other way, which people know, but often even if they're drivers, they're confused by what signal means what.
Yes.
So
clear is best.
Yes. Absolutely. So there are some new laws coming up. One in particular
called, an exciting one.
Yes, very exciting for cyclists, but I think is going to be greatly misunderstood again. And so I'd like to kind of preemptively strike, and let's talk a little bit about the law that is coming up about stopping.
So we've got, in essence, a law that, although it's being called similar to the Idaho stop sign law, is actually technically what has already been passed in Delaware. And the simple version is just that starting in January, bicyclists may treat stop signs as yield signs in Oregon. That's it.
Wow. It's a big deal, though.
It is, but let's break that down. Now, let's go back a second. Mark, what's the law say about how anyone yields?
Right now, yield law is if you're facing a yield sign, you have to make sure that it is safe for you as the person, the operator of a vehicle or bicycle or any type of vehicle. You have to treat that yield sign functionally as a stop sign unless it's safe to continue. So that it means if there is a car or a pedestrian or any other immediate hazard, you have to give right of way to those.
So just to summarize that a little bit, you still have to stop at the stop sign. If there's another vehicle who's stopped it, let's say you're at a four-way stop, there's another vehicle that stopped there first, or let's say you're at a two-way stop and there's a vehicle that's on the opposing street, you still have to stop for that vehicle. You can't just like be like, oops, I yielded, and then ride in front of them.
Correct. Yielding is an active verb. Yielding is not a passive verb. You don't get to pretend you yielded. You have to actually do the thing. And the thing that we know from data is that car drivers and bicycle operators all fail to stop at stop signs at about the same rates.
Wow.
It's well studied. It's about 11 to 17%, depending on whose studies you read. And what we know from looking at both Delaware and Idaho, where they've had similar laws in the years on the books for years, is that this works. We did not see in either of those states big increases in crashes, and we saw the bicyclists getting the massive benefits of maintaining their momentum. Because, of course, the large difference between a car and a motorcycle and a bicycle is the motor. And that's what this is really about.
The human power.
Is making it easier. Correct.
So, but yielding would mean that in almost all cases, you will have to curb your speed a bit, and you will have to prepare to stop as if it was necessary to stop. But you've got still some momentum so that you can keep going if the coast is clear.
Correct. It just gives bicyclists a little bit of an open window in that if they're approaching a stop sign, again, most bicyclists are moving slower than car drivers, so that you can see further. If you're moving in miles per hour, if you convert that to feet per second, it's about 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
So 30 miles an hour is about 45 feet per second,
okay.
Right? A bicyclist going 10 miles an hour is moving at 15 feet per second, right? That's a lot slower. So you can see a lot further. And you can evaluate an intersection much better. And you can say, boy, there's a stop sign. And the law requires me to stop. unless I can see that it is safe to continue, at which point I can treat it like a yield sign and I don't have to come to that full stop.
Okay, good to know. So what if it was a situation where, what situations would someone have to stop?
Well, again, the stop sign is a stop sign. So if there's anybody else, whether they're a pedestrian or a car driver or another bicyclist who already is in the intersection or has the right of way. For example, if there's a main street with a cross street that has a stop sign, that main street still has the right of way. Whether it's a person crossing in front of the bicyclist or a car coming from the bicyclist left or right, those things still have the right of way and the stop sign is still a stop sign. But if the bicyclist can see that there's no pedestrian, no motorcycle, no car.
No other cyclist.
No other cyclist, no other road users, and it is safe to proceed through that stop sign as a yield, they don't have to come to that complete stopping of forward motion, which is a stop.
Excellent. Well, it's information like this that makes KBOO so valuable to our listeners. And right now we are in the winter membership drive, and we would love you to become a member of KBOO. It's all you have to do is call 1-877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm/give and make your donation. Become a part of the KBOO family and really help this kind of radio, this kind of important information get out to people. We know you're out there. We know you're listening. We know that there are many new people moving to Portland right now. I know, and maybe not even Portland, the entire metro area. So I know you are out there and I know you are listening. Maybe you've thought about becoming a member and you just haven't quite gotten around to it. I am urging you to call now, 877-500-5266. If you're at work, maybe you're listening to us as you're also working at your design job or whatnot, you can also just sneak over, open a little tab, go to kboo.fm/give and make your donation that way and become a member, support this radio and programming that we have here. I was listening earlier on my way here today to the programming about Indigenous women and the struggles that they face. And it was, I had briefly been on one of our other public radio stations in Portland, and that was, it was about the impeachment, and the impeachment is important, but there are so many other things that are important as well right now. And that's what KBOO gives you, is that alternative look, that coverage that is more well-rounded. We're not just myopically focused on one thing. We are giving you many, many viewpoints. We are here, we are community radio, and we want to give the viewpoints of the entire community, especially people who are not, voices that are not always heard in our radio, on media. And if you support that, you want to become a part of that, become a member or increase your membership at 877-500-5266, or you can do that online at kboo.fm and increase your membership that way. We are right now, as part of the membership drive, giving away for a $60 donation, that's $5 a month. You can also do a one-time donation, but if you want to become a member or increase your membership, we are giving away an author who's been on our show and a former KBOO Bike Show co-host, Ellie Blue, and a current KBOO Bike Show co-host, April Streeter, are the authors of Our Bodies, Our Bikes. And for a $60 donation, that's $5 a month or a one-time $60 donation, you can get that as a gift, as a thank you from us for becoming a member. April, do you want to talk a little bit about Our Bodies, Our Bikes?
Sure, I'd love to. So it's actually a compilation of essays. And so we took contributions from many different people, very diverse group in the community, and Ellie and I edited these. And we kind of, it started as, if you don't know, Ellie Blue works at Microcosm Publishing, which has done a fantastic job of publishing kind of the diversity of the bike community in all different ways. And in this book, we've got essays and some awesome art. So you'd really enjoy having this as a coffee table book or giving it to somebody as a gift over the holidays for somebody who is interested in bicycles but wants to get a lot of different viewpoints on what it means for our bodies to be on bikes.
And this is a thank you gift for a $60 donation. That's $5 a month, or you can do a one-time $60 donation or more and still get a thank you gift of Our Bodies, Our Bikes. Just call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and /give and donate now. You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show. We are here with Mark Ginsburg, a partner in Berkshire Ginsburg LLC Personal Injury Lawyers. He specializes in protecting the rights of injured cyclists and their families while addressing the unique aspects of bicycle collision cases. He also works as a consultant to Oregon state legislatures when forming new laws around transportation. So, Mark Ginsburg, before we took that little break, you were talking about the new Oregon stop law, I will call that, for cyclists. And one of the things that I've heard about it that I didn't hear you touch on yet, and maybe you can speak to this, is that part of the reason we want cyclists to treat it as a yield is because the most dangerous place for a cyclist to be is in an intersection. And by holding their momentum, holding their speed, even just by a small fraction, it helps them get through the intersection faster and get out of danger more quickly.
Right. And yes is the short answer. In general, if you look at any place where you've got two different types of road users, or even two of the same type of road user traveling in different directions, there's always potential for conflict. Whether it's two cars at a classic plus sign intersection or a pedestrian trying to cross a street, you know, going sidewalk, crosswalk, sidewalk. One of the reasons that we like curb extensions is it shortens the distance that a pedestrian is exposed to the motor vehicle
and
traffic.
For those listeners out there that don't know what a curb, they've experienced curb extensions, but they may not know that term. What is that?
That's a place where at an intersection, a sidewalk is bumped out a little bit so that functionally the crosswalk portion of a roadway, because in Oregon, every intersection is a crosswalk, painted or not, the crosswalk portion of the intersection is actually shorter so that a person, a pedestrian, whether they're on foot or wheelchair or mobility device, the distance they have to cover is shortened. And so then for any given person at whatever rate they move is also shortened, so they're exposed to motor vehicle traffic and other road users for less time.
And they're also a little bit more visible because they're safely a little bit out more towards traffic, but they're still on the sidewalk.
Right, so it makes it easier for motor vehicle drivers and users to see them so they can properly yield the right-of-way as they're supposed to under Oregon law.
And then it's just to give people an example, I think of Alberta Street as a perfect example. Is Division that way as well?
Division is as well.
Okay, so those are two good examples if you've driven walked or...
Let me just say, as to Division, what we would refer to as lower Division is... from 39th west towards downtown Portland, east to the southeast Division is that way. Outer Division, just like much of outer southeast Portland, is still incredibly dangerous. Some of the most dangerous roads we have here in Portland are, you know, two lanes each direction with a center turn lane and some bike lanes, and the crossing distances are brutal. And that's why we see those outer southeast Portland roads that as more and more of Portland's population moves to those areas are still incredibly dangerous for vulnerable road users, for bicyclists, for pedestrians. The city's doing an okay job of making them better, but they're year after year some of the most dangerous roads in Portland, and we need to encourage our elected officials and our road designers to do more and do it faster to make those roads better.
Excellent, yes.
And so then to go back to answering the question, if a bicycle is stopped at an intersection, a bicyclist, and then they have to start with zero speed, zero momentum, and cross an intersection, the amount of time that bicyclist will spend in the intersection is greater than the same bicyclist if they can roll up at 5 or 8 miles an hour and carry that momentum forward. The amount of physical energy or work or calories they need to use to continue moving is less. It's more efficient for them to carry a little bit of, I don't want to say speed because they're certainly not speeding, but a little bit of forward movement, and it's better for everybody. It gets them through the intersection faster, which is better for them. It gets them through the intersection faster, which is better for car drivers or bus drivers, for everybody else who wants to use the intersection, and it lets everybody carry on with their day.
So it sounds like what you're describing, this Oregon stop law, it's really a way to keep traffic flowing in a more, let's say, natural and also efficient manner.
Yes. One of the metrics that is used in measuring how efficient a road is called VMT, vehicle miles traveled. And you can look at a road and by road counting figure out what the VMT is for it. Is that road moving fast or slow? And that's not always a function of speed, right? Cars driving fast, you can have a higher VMT, but roads that work efficiently can also have a high VMT with low vehicular speeds.
Okay.
And speeds that are slower are safer. So any way we can reduce, you know, clogging of an intersection can help every road user flow. Every person who's riding a bicycle means they're one less person driving a car. You know, it makes the roads less congested because we know that we can fit more bicyclists into less space. And so if we can make it easier for those bicyclists, it means the marginal bicyclist, the person who could ride their bicycle instead of their car, maybe they want to. If we make it easier for them by lowering that threshold, it means every other car driver has a little more space, a little less congestion.
So this is fascinating to me because I think I had an idea in my mind of the stop law as affecting sort of specific instances, but I think you're describing it as something that's going to affect the entire bicycle infrastructure and hopefully in a positive manner.
If we look at both Delaware and Idaho, prior studies indicate, yes, it will help everybody. We also must acknowledge, though, that there are already cyclists who treat stop signs as yield signs. But again, it's a false flag to say that's only bicyclists, because you know the studies are that car drivers do the same with stop signs at about the same rates. But I think what it does is it acknowledges a reality and it encourages other people, like I personally, because of what I do for a living, am famous for doing full stops at stop signs, because I must. I ask other people to follow the laws to the letter of the law, quite literally. And so I hold myself to that standard. And if I'm riding with friends or, you know, up until a couple years ago, I was racing bicycles with my racing teammates with my name on our sponsored jerseys. I have to really stop here. I can't just roll through this intersection. But the reality is, of course, that many cyclists even now will do a quick look, and if it's safe, they will continue. So what we know is we are simply saying that this behavior, which is already safe, which is already happening, we are simply making legal. And so it's the marginal rider, like me, who starting in January, I will probably ride a little bit differently. I'll still be safe and I'll be careful. But it's to make it easier for that marginal cyclist so that it's easier for everybody on the roadway.
Yeah, I think sometimes there's a misconception that we who are out there on bikes are doing so because we have no regard for our life in the first place. That's absolutely not true. It's actually the opposite, that most of us very much enjoy riding our bikes and want to continue doing so, and we can't do that if we're not alive or we're injured. And so the misconception that out there that we are somehow flouting the law and also,
thrill seekers.
Yeah, thrill seekers, which I think the three of us in this room are probably
not.
The least thrill but we're also more of the majority of the people out there riding. There's many people riding with their families now. That's a huge change that's shifting. There's people that are just trying to get to where they go because it's actually
convenient.
Easier. It's convenient. It's
efficient.
Efficient.
Good for the brain.
I'm a
good
little
for the
under
body.
The weather. I had to drive today. Driving today meant I had to find parking. I had to pay for parking. And both those things weren't completely out of what I could do. But did it take more time? Was it less efficient? And did it cost me more money plus gas? Yes. I would have preferred to have ridden. But it's not because I'm a thrill seeker. It's because it's actually convenient and easier. So I think one of the arguments that people have when they hear this law, especially if they've never been on a bike, is, oh, well, they're those
scofflaws.
Thank you.
You know, I think about this a lot. I really do. And I think what it really boils down to in terms of animosity, car driver versus bicycle rider, on some level, I really think it boils down to jealousy. Because if we think about that narrative, I am stuck in my car in traffic. Of course, failing to acknowledge that my car is part of the traffic.
Right.
Right? No single snowflake thinks it's responsible for the avalanche. So I'm sitting in my car, I'm stuck in traffic, and I see a bicyclist go whizzing by in the narrative, and I'm mad at them, right? And what I really think it's about is a misplaced jealousy because they're doing the thing I want. If we think about every movie about the apocalypse, on some level, what those movies are about are, what could I do if laws didn't apply to me anymore? Mm-hmm. And the first thing that people do is they get in a car and they go speeding around, right? And so if we're stuck, constrained by those laws, and we perceive, fairly or not, that that bicyclist is not constrained by the same laws, that jealousy gets converted to anger. And that's why we're like, you know, you dang scofflaws, right? It's a narrative versus looking at ourself, right? If you feel like you're stuck in traffic and you have the ability to get out of traffic, break that cycle yourself, on even once a week, for example. I say to people, what if you could find a way, if you have a 9-to-5 desk job and you commute by car, what if you could find a way to reduce your car driving by 20%? And the simple answer is, ride your bike to work on Fridays in the summer. You don't have to be a purist. You don't have to do everything all the time. One day a week.
Exactly.
It's easy to do.
And also, I think that we've associated freedom with cars for so long that it's part of our, almost like genetically, we think, oh, car is freedom, when actually bicycle is just as much, if not more, freedom. And especially where we've got a responsibility on both sides, the car drivers and the bicyclists, to observe the letter of the law, it does give you a free feeling to be able to get on your bike, even if, as you say, it's just once a week.
Yeah. One of the other pieces you asked me to sort of think about before coming, which is in a slightly different direction, is sort of advice to cyclists. And I think it relates to cars quite a bit in terms of insurance. And to be clear, I don't sell insurance. I don't make money on insurance. But in my day job, I deal with car drivers and bicyclists and crashes. And one of the things that a lot of people do not understand is that if you're a bicyclist who owns a car, as many are, your car insurance covers you when you're on your bicycle. And one of the pieces in Oregon, which is mandatory in Oregon, optional in Washington, optional in California, is medical coverage. Oregon calls it personal injury protection, or PIP. And if you look at your own car insurance, the minimum, depending on your policy, is $25,000 in medical coverage or $50,000. And I always encourage people to simply ask their own insurance company, how much would it cost to increase that coverage? Because if you are hit on your bicycle in Oregon, if you have a car, your car's PIP, your car medical coverage, is the first thing that will pay your bills, even when you're on your bicycle. And there's no reason not to have that protection.
And $50,000 is really a drop in the bucket when it comes to a major accident.
If you break a leg, it's gone in a heartbeat. If you need a back surgery, it's gone in a blink of an eye.
So as a car driver, if you have, and you do have insurance, then you should check with your representative of your insurance and make sure that your PIP is up to $50,000.
Yeah, you can have different companies sell different amounts, but really,
I think you can maybe even get more than $50,000.
It's about high information. You need to ask your specific company, how much do I have now? And then the next question is, what's the next step up? And how much more would that cost me?
Okay.
And if you can afford it, I would recommend to people to increase their PIP insurance and also their liability insurance. But if you have to pick one or the other, maximizing your PIP, because it will cover you. It follows you as a pedestrian. It follows you if you're jogging. It follows you. And this is sort of going down a rabbit hole, but if you're in a friend's car and you get hurt, your friend's PIP covers you, but your own PIP is still covering you like a backup.
Excellent. And I will use that great information to roll right into, speaking of backups, we are in our winter membership drive, and you guys aren't a backup out there. You all are our heartbeat. You are our blood flow. You are our support system, and we need you. We need you to be a member if you're not already, and we need you to increase your membership if you're already a member. Please think about that too. It is the holiday season, a time of giving, and KBOO is a great place. This is Give Week. It also helps in that way. Some donations are magnified by that. All you need to do is call 877-500-5266. That's kboo.fm/give online. And just give. We are here. The bike show is here for you every month. And this month, we've got a special gift, Our Bodies, Our Bikes. Editors Ellie Blue, former KBOO co-host, and April Streeter, current KBOO co-host and on the air with us right now. It's for a $60 membership pledge. You can receive as a gift a copy of Our Bodies, Our Bikes. And April, can you tell people a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So Our Bodies, Our Bikes is a compilation. It's a resource, and it's a companion for women who ride and women identifying who ride bicycles. It's got a lot of personal essays, and through these stories and guidelines, it explores the intersection between cycling and women's health. So there's a lot of resources in this book. It's got a lot of contributors locally and also from around this around our area. And it's really just a fun book. It's fun for the coffee table or the tea table, or it's fun to give away as a gift. And I think one of the things that, Tori, that you've mentioned a little bit but about this pledge drive is that when you become a member of KABU, you really become some part of something bigger. It's like when you start bicycling and you get out there and you realize, oh, I have a tribe here. These people that are on the bike lanes, these people riding our bikes, we're a tribe, and we do this because it gives us joy. And same thing with KABU. We are a community. Sometimes we're very like huge and kind of unwieldy community, but we're definitely a community, and we need your support, and we want you to be part of our community by pledging. So to do that, it's quick and easy to donate to KABU. Just call 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
That's okay. That's what we're here for. And speaking of giving, we're here with Mark Ginsburg, a partner in Berkshire Ginsburg LLC Personal Injury Lawyers. He specializes in protecting the rights of injured bicyclists and their families while addressing the unique aspects of bicycle collision cases. Speaking of that, before we took our break, he was speaking about personal injury protection. If you are a driver, which many cyclists are, I think the majority actually of cyclists are also drivers and have some kind of car insurance, that your personal injury protection on your car insurance covers you not just in your car.
Correct. And, you know, we see that a lot in, especially as the economy fluctuates. One place where people sometimes, if they're really stretched thin to save money, is they won't pay their car insurance. And so if you're a bicyclist and you are hit by an uninsured driver, your personal car insurance will also cover you. Also, if you are married to someone, check your policies. If you are living with someone as a partner, you can add people to your policy. Different policies are different. Some call it named insured, some call it named driver. Depending on the policies, they're slightly different. But one of the things that we as a firm do that I like to think we're some of the best in the industry is we find places for insurance for bicyclists who have been hurt badly and who need our help. Some of the other places where we're seeing that become an issue are if a bicyclist has one of the different car share memberships, and this is sort of new tip of the spear law. We are looking at whether or not you are named insured under those policies, and therefore that, I don't need to name names of specific companies, but whether or not that car share company's membership insurance benefits apply to you as the same as it would as if it were your personal car. And it depends on some of the companies say yes and some say no, and we're getting into some litigation with some of them to really figure that out.
Is that something that, I know you work with a Oregon legislature, I cannot say this word today, legislature, thank you, to get smart things that are obvious, kind of like the stop law, work towards making common sense laws. Is that something that you're working with trying to make across the board?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of it is sort of unintended consequences, like the various what we would call transportation connection networks or TCNs, that's your Lyfts and your Ubers. We're seeing a lot of unusual insurance coverage issues there depending on what they call the phase, right? So is the driver, do they have the app on? Are they on their way to pick up a Lyft? Do they have the fare in the vehicle? And so we're seeing that the levels of insurance coverage and the types of insurance coverage vary depending on those phases. And that doesn't just affect the driver, but it affects the passenger. The same is true with taxis. Hmm. So we've been in front of the legislature a couple times to figure out how do we make sure that people are protected, because a lot of people don't understand those subtle differences and the effects they can have on not only the driver and the passenger, but a person who is hit, whether it's a bicyclist or a pedestrian. And so that's all as TCNs grow, as more people are doing that as a side gig or even a main gig, the insurance implications are really so new that only sort of eggheads like me who sit around and think about it are seeing what's going on.
Well, not just that you're an egghead who thinks about it, but you actually are seeing, God bless you for being an egghead who thinks about it, but you're also actually, as in your job, seeing the repercussions of this lack of clarity.
Oh, absolutely. We've got...
That's why you're thinking about it. It's something I wouldn't occur to me because I haven't been injured or been in a car or a Lyft or an Uber when it was in an accident, so that doesn't affect me.
Right.
But you see it probably more regularly than other people do.
Yeah, we see it all the time, and especially, you know, as more and more people are doing that as a side gig, even if they're only working a little bit, their own personal car insurance won't cover them because they're driving for work, which is always a classic exclusion on a car policy. So the same is true if you're delivering pizzas and you are driving for a company in your own car. If you are driving for work, your personal car insurance, who don't think they've insured that risk, will deny coverage should you be in a crash and need that coverage. And the same is true of bicyclists. If you're a bicycle messenger and you are working versus a bicycle messenger on the way to work. And we've had those cases. And the question is, well, was that bike messenger on their way to work in the morning, or had they already radioed in and they're on the way to pick up their first package? So are they working already? And it's a fascinating intersection. And it's part of why I figure I'm halfway through my legal career. I've been doing this about 25 years and I love it. And I've seen a lot of those things, and we've usually been able to solve them for our clients in the positive ways. But also when there's a bad outcome, we try to work with the legislature. And that's kind of what we're doing right now with the TCNs to try and clean that stuff up.
So I'm thankful that you are keeping track of these things as they develop and the trends as they happen. And then, as you just described, trying to fix supplement our legal system so it helps cover people more. But I'm wondering, is there a resource that we should mention for people who might just want to get to the basics or heard about the Oregon Stop Law and really want to look at it? Is there any place you can go, or is that something piecemeal that cyclists have to put together in order to have the information that they need to be safe on the road?
You know, April, it's a great question, and I don't have a simple answer. You know, I read laws all the time, and so in getting ready to come in today, I literally just pulled up the Senate Bill 998, which is becoming part of Oregon's revised statutes, or the ORS.
Okay.
And so in terms of where people can read it, there's always the Oregon Driver's Manual. The Oregon revised statutes are readily available online for those who have access to the internet, which is only about half of U.S. American households. So we need to maintain, you know, sort of keep an eye on that. But Oregon's bicycle laws are just in the, you know, Oregon revised statute 811, 814, and 815. And the stop sign law is just becoming part of ORS 811-260, which is a fascinating list for those who like reading this stuff. Oregon Revised Statute 811-260 literally lists what a person is supposed to do at every type of traffic control device.
Oh, wow.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I think it goes through about JK, something like that.
Okay.
And it really does say, here is what you're supposed to do at a stop sign. Here's what you're supposed to do at a flashing red. You know, and it's sort of like for, again, I'm really showing my nerdy side, for the folks who read the Constitution every year on the 4th of July, right? Maybe once a year you sit down and you read 811-260. It's a 5-minute read if you're reading slow, just so they understand the law. Because I think a lot of times, especially we see this in yelling matches, where nobody understands the law and everybody perceives that they're right.
Yeah.
You know, one of the obscure ones that always surprises people is we all believe that you can't change lanes in an intersection. Right? Everyone thinks that's the law. But nowhere
that's the law. Yeah, I do too.
Nowhere in Oregon's laws does it say you may not change lanes in an intersection.
Now, well, that's good because I've done it before. Right. But but that's interesting. But that's the law in other states, yes.
Again, I'm only admitted to practice law in Oregon, New York, and Washington. So I can't speak to every state. But I know that, again, we see people get mad at each other for things that weren't breaking the law because of it's our perception.
Right, right.
You know?
So you're listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studios in Portland, Oregon. And we're here speaking with Mark Ginsburg, a partner with Berkshire Ginsburg LLC, personal injury lawyers. The statutes that you mentioned, we will try and put those up on the KBOO Facebook page so that you can have a look at them if you are so inclined.
And unfortunately, we're just about at the end of our time today. Mark Ginsburg, thank you so much for joining us today. I have learned as always, so much. And it's always a pleasure to have you share your knowledge and expertise with our listeners. So if our listeners want to know more about your practice or have more questions for you, where can they get a hold of you?
BerkshireGinsburgLaw.com, spelled just like it sounds, BerkshireGinsburgLaw.com, or you can always call my office. I love talking bike nerd law stuff, 503-542-3000. I'm easy to find here in Portland. I'm happy to be a lawyer here for 25 years, and I think I'll keep doing it. So thank you.
Excellent. You have been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from the KBOO Studios in Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of every month. We'll have links to Mark Ginsburg's website on our Facebook page, as well as some of those statutes. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are generously archived at thebikeshow.portlandtransport.com. The Bike Show is produced by myself, April Streeter, and Alon Robb. We'd like to also thank our in-studio engineer today, Asia Hawthorne, our web host, Chris Smith, as well as our editor, Josh Hetrick. If you have comments, questions, or show ideas, The Bike Show would love to hear from you. You can contact us on Facebook, at our Twitter handle, at KBOO Bike Show, or email us through the KBOO website. We'll be back next month with more news and views from the bike world. Until then, make it a great day, and keep riding your bike. And become a KBOO member. It's our winter membership drive right now. And all you have to do is dial these numbers, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. You can also just get online at kboo.fm/give and make a donation that way. In any case, what you do by making that donation is become a member and support excellent, excellent programming like we've given you today. The Bike Show loves to be here. We've been on air for almost 20 years, and we would not be able to be here without you, our listeners, donating and becoming part of the KBOO family and becoming part of the membership. Again, that number is 877-500-5266 or at kboo.fm. And it's not too late for a $60 pledge to get a copy of Our Bodies, Our Bikes, edited by Ellie Blue, former Bike Show co-host, and April Streeter, current Bike Show co-host. Can you tell us a little bit more about that $60 donation gift?
Yes, for a $60 donation, that's just $5 a month, you can get a copy of Our Bodies, Our Bikes and keep it or give it away. This is a compilation of essays, and it covers so much. I'm just looking through the table of contents, and it's got sections on safety with three different essays, clothes, how to pedal and attire yourself professionally, dressing for success on the bike. I love that one. And every season biking. But that's not all. There's a lot more in here. Talks about biking and menstruation, sex, childbearing, our bodies, our choices. It's really filled with resources for a new cyclist or somebody who is interested in getting a little more in depth in different topics about biking. And you can get that book today by calling KBOO and giving us your pledge. It's quick and easy, 877-500-5266. Back to you, Tori.
Or you can also go to kboo.fm. /give. However, we've got people on phones waiting for your call, so we'd love to hear from you at 877-500-5266. We want to continue giving you programming like we brought you today. We love being here. We've had everyone from Earl Blumenauer to Mark Ginsburg to international guests. International calls, when we have people call in, they're not free. It takes a lot of things to keep the lights on here. And most importantly, your donation, your support is what keeps KBOO going. So call right now, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Either way, if you are a member, we appreciate you. If you are a listener, we appreciate you. We want everyone to be a part of the KBOO family as much as you possibly can. Remember, you can also always come down to the studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and bring in your donation personally if you prefer to, because we want to meet you. For us, you are KBOO as much as we are, and we want you to be a part of that family. Again, the number, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. The pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Bridges Cafe and Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic, open daily. Lunch was provided by Por Que No Taqueria, located in North Portland at 3524 North Mississippi Ave. Por Que No Taqueria has been serving Portland since 2005 and has been committed to both the communities and the food that they serve. More information online at porquenotacos.com. Dinner was provided by Scotty's Pizza Parlor, located at 2128 Southeast Division Street in the Hosford-Abernethy neighborhood of Portland. Serving pizza, desserts, and more, Scotty's is open every day from 11:30 to 9 p.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.